This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. French voters will go to the polls on April 23rd for the first round of voting in their presidential elections. If no single candidate wins a clear majority, there will be a runoff election between the top two vote winners on May 7th. International onlookers are watching the elections with great interest, because of the rise in popularity of the leftist politician Jean-Luc Mélenchon. Mélenchon has galvanized progressives in France with his campaign platform aimed at workers' rights and heavy investment by the state. But he faces a tough fight in a crowded field of candidates, among them the ultra-right-wing Marine Le Pen. We go now to Paris to speak with Jean Bricmont. He is a mathematical and statistical physicist at the University of Louvain and the author of Humanitarian Imperialism, Using Human Rights to Sell War, co-author of Fashionable Nonsense, Postmodern Intellectuals' Abuse of Science. Welcome to the program, Jean.
Thank you.
So first, let's talk about who Jean-Luc Mélenchon is. He is not new to politics, but his sort of newfound popularity is something that's a little bit different from what he had managed to arouse years ago, right?
Yes, that's true, because there is an increased dissatisfaction, and he's able to capture that dissatisfaction. It's a little bit like Bernie Sanders in the US, although I think is maybe stronger than Sanders, but the problem is that I'm not at all sure that his program is coherent. And the problem, which is not the same as in the United States, is the problem of the European Union. You see, many people see, especially in the United States, the European Union as something progressive and so on, but that's not the case. The European Union is forcing people to respect, every state to respect certain treaties, and the treaties basically impose free trade, not only within Europe, but also with the rest of the world. For example, it's impossible in the European Union to make any, to limit in any way export of capital, either within Europe or outside of Europe. That's one of their rules. Then there's also free trade of labor, which, because of the huge inequalities in salaries within Europe, which is not similar to the United States, makes it, you know, very harsh for unqualified workers to compete with their with people who come from poorer countries in Europe. So these two questions about the European Union raise serious questions. Now, Mélenchon claims that he wants to renegotiate the treaties, but the negotiation, you have to understand that the rules of the European Union impose a unanimity, both of the parliament and of the government, of all the other members, in order to change the treaties. And I don't see how that's going to happen, because if you want to limit the fiscal paradise, for example, Luxembourg won't agree. If you want to limit the social dumping, Romania and Poland won't agree, and Germany will not agree to anything. So it seems to me that there is a pipe dream in the program of Mélenchon, in the sense that he claims he's going to renegotiate the treaty, but he has no chance to do so.
Well, if you set that aside, if you accept just for the minute that the European Union is very difficult to change, isn't there still plenty of room for improving workers' rights, reducing income inequality that Mélenchon might be able to achieve as president and that he's talked about? I mean, for example, he says he wants 100% tax rate on the very rich.
Yeah, but how is he going to do that in practice? You see, there'll be a fiscal evasion if he does that. I mean, maybe that's allowed by the European rules, but you see, it seems to me that the problems are deeper. The problem in Europe and also in the United States, in my opinion, is massive deindustrialization. We basically, what we do, and the left feels very good about it, is that we import goods that are produced cheaply from China or elsewhere, but mostly from China, which are produced in very, very bad labor conditions, very bad environmental conditions. But nobody cares about that. And then you have a huge unemployment here. Why don't we produce here the goods that we consume? Well, they would cost more if the salaries were not the same as in China, of course. But that would be also a limit to huge waste, because we waste an enormous amount of clothes and appliances and all kinds of things that we import for cheap from Asia. And it seems to me that this is not a sustainable form of development, and nobody is addressing this issue.
So we all thought that a British exit from the European Union was impossible, and then the vote took place and it happened. Is there talk of a French exit from the EU as well?
Oh, yes. There is a candidate whose name is Asselineau. You probably never heard of him. He's, you know, small and rising, but I actually like him. He's a regular, he's a sort of a goalist, but not right-wing goalist, but he's for respect of international law, he's for negotiation with other countries. He wants to get out of European Union, of the euro, of course, and of NATO, which is an important point, in my view, more important even than the rest. And that, I think, is a small candidate, and he's not a very leftist candidate. He's not radical the way the Trotskyists are, but he's realistic, and I think it's a more hopeful sign. Of course, he's been marginalized all along, and of course, just during the campaign, he cannot make up for his previous marginalization. But it seems to me that he's more consistent than Mélenchon. You see, I'm old enough to remember Mitterrand. When Mitterrand was elected, there was an incredible amount of enthusiasm and illusions, etc. And then after 2 years, well, first of all, they raised the salaries and so on, that's fine. And then what did people do with the money? They bought foreign goods. So that increases the trade deficit, and it also increases the public deficit. And after 2 years, they realize they have to change, and they change. That was the turn towards rigor. And they change, but then they change everything. They change the ideology. They started to praise the free market. And then later they praise the war, the left. I mean, they became pro-war, like they've been in 1991, in 1999 with the Kosovo war and afterwards. So there's been a huge ideological change inside the left during the Mitterrand years. And to me, this has been a cultural and intellectual disaster of undescribable proportion. If I could go back in time and I could fix the election, I would have Giscard and have the left in the opposition, because when the left was in opposition during the Gaulle, we had the best of possible world, a sort of a sovereign, independent government, so-called right, but in fact more to the left than the present left, and then a left which was at least playing the role of an opposition.
So, I mean, it sounds...
That would be the best solution, because this left, you see, the left, it's not so easy to have a leftist program today in the developed world. And one of the main things, for example, that people should do, for example, is peace. But the most of the left, one of the things which is good in Mélenchon is that he wants to stop the interference policy. He has not been consistent in the past. He was for the Libyan war, and he's for regime change in Syria, but he says it's the Syrians who have to do it, so he's sort of so and so. But he's for détente with Russia. And of course, he's violently attacked by the sort of the Mitterrandist left, like the Blairite left in England, the Libération and Le Monde for
like establishment Democrats in the US that are pro-war.
Exactly. The left is pro-war to a point which is unbelievable. I mean, there are more, for example, Marine Le Pen is anti-war. Okay, you can call her far-right, but who is the far-right? She's been against all these wars. Fillon, who is the so-called democratic right, who is very liberal and so on, he's very neoliberal and so on. He's also basically, not as much, but he's basically also against these wars. The only one who is pro-NATO and pro-Europe is Macron, of the big candidates.
Macron, yeah. So Jean-Luc Mélenchon has sort of eschewed his tendencies towards supporting interventionism, now is speaking out against these sorts of interventions, which of course can be a good thing for those of us who believe war does not solve problems. But what do you make of the fact that he is also not somebody who has, you said you had a problem with the fact that he wasn't very consistent. Is he even running alongside or as part of an actual party? Didn't he set up the Left Party in the late 2000s?
Yeah, that's a complicated thing. He has a left party and he has a Insoumis. That's a movement which is supporting his candidacy. You see, there will be legislative election after the presidential election. If by miracle, I really emphasize, by miracle he was elected, which I don't think will happen, Then, of course, I don't know how well his party will do in the legislative election. If he doesn't do well, then he will have to find a majority with the socialists. Maybe he doesn't have a majority. Maybe the right will have a majority. That's quite possible. I think the country is very much to the right. So, you know, for
you
example,
you think the country is very much to the right?
Sure. Hmm. Sure.
So, how do you explain Mélenchon's popularity? He is getting up there in polls.
What does he mean popularity? He has 20%, 22%, what do you mean? I mean, you see, there are four front runners, and none of them is able to run the country in the sense of being really popular. Fillon is the traditional right, and he would have won the election handily if there had not been all these scandals, which in my mind are to a large extent made up, but let's put that aside. Marine Le Pen is popular, but he has too much opposition. So is Mélenchon. Mélenchon has a lot of opposition on the right. I mean, he's not that popular. He's 20%, 25%, even that. But that doesn't mean a lot. And then Macron is the candidate who looks like he could, gather everybody around him. But of course, he's so empty and so fake that he doesn't. So nobody's going to lead France. It's going to be a crisis. It's going to be a permanent crisis because none of these four candidates, there are only possibilities for the second round. And these four possibilities, none of them can really run the country, in my opinion. I don't even know if they can have a majority in the parliament. It's not so simple.
Right. So just for our American audience, because we have a very different system here, it's a field of candidates that are running. Whoever, if somebody were to win 50% or more of the vote, then yes, that would be it. But that seems very unlikely given that the front runners are growing at about 20%.
That has never happened, by the way, in the Fifth Republic. Even de Gaulle didn't get 50% the first round in 1965. Which was the first election. It was very popular. He didn't campaign. He thought he would win. And Mitterrand forced him to go to the second round, and he won the second round handily. But, it was considered remarkable for Mitterrand to force him to go to the second round in 65. And he didn't campaign then. But, of course, even him didn't went to the first round.
Who do you expect the top two vote winners to be? Some are predicting a runoff between Marine Le Pen, the ultra-right-wing candidate, and Jean-Luc Mélenchon, who is among the most left-wing candidates. Could that happen? If so, that would represent the sort of polarization in France.
Yeah, that's a possibility. Everything is possible mathematically because the polls are not that definite. I mean, the polls are not that reliable, as you know, from the United States.
Don't
and
we
all
know
the
it?
Polls are 2 or 3% of, for the moment, I think the more likely thing is Macron versus Le Pen, in which case, of course, Macron will win handily. But you see, when you call Marine Le Pen extreme far right, you have to see what the definition is. Is being pro-war for far right or not? How do you count these things? You see, many of these...
She's virulently anti-immigrant and many would say outright racist.
Yeah, but is that important relative to war? I mean, it's a matter of how you scale things. Yeah, she's anti-immigrant, but of course so is the population. But is that more important than war? How many people
it would
have
be
killed?
Important to French immigrants.
Sorry?
It would be important to French immigrants and people who believe in a pluralistic
society.
Yes,
yes, yes. I know the American. I've lived in the U.S. for a long time, and I know the concern of the American left for immigrants. But what about war? I mean, how many people have been killed in the foreign wars? How many people have been killed in Syria because of the U.S. support for the insurrections? How many people are killed in Sudan because of the secession? I mean, these things have been supported by Western powers, and it seems to me that are far worse than anything that you can blame anti-immigration parties for. It's not that I'm anti-immigration, it's just that it seems to me that in the scale of values, war and peace take the backseat compared to this question of so-called racism or anti-immigration. On the other hand, you must realize that running on a pro-immigration program will bring you about maybe 1% or 2% of the public. At this point, whether you like it or not, and whether you want to change it or not, you have to realize that people don't want more immigrants. There are too many conflicts, and nobody wants more immigrants. So hardly, except a few far-left people. So if you want to start from something, I would advise people not to start from a pro-immigration platform. Try to get people around. I mean, you see, the pro-immigration platform has also been a platform of the left who has never cared about the fate of the French workers.
And so that's a really important point, Jean. Then the economic populism platform that Mélenchon has put forward, shouldn't that be something that you would think would strike a chord among the French majority, particularly
sure,
his position
sure,
on...
But you see, yeah, but you see, the problem is that what is your platform really consisting of? You want to do, okay, let's do redistribution of income. Again, I lived through the 81, 83 years of Mitterrand, the first part of Mitterrand. And then they changed. But what did they do? They did redistribute a certain amount of money. But then what did people do with that? They bought foreign goods. So it increases the trade deficit and it increases the public deficit. And what do you do with that? Do you continue doing that forever or what do you do? I mean, there is a real economic question. Of course, you can do the revolution and then go to socialism, etc. But that's not a popular proposition. That was not what he was elected for. He was elected on a reformist program, which I think was ill-taught. And I think Mélenchon is the same thing. He has a reformist program. He's not proposing socialist revolution or anything like that. But it's not well taught because it doesn't deal with the issue of the European Union, which is preventing. Wait. The European Union would make his reform impossible.
So the EU is one of many sort of forces that are beyond the control, at least currently, of French politicians and the French public.
Exactly why it was made. You see, the reason the Mitterrand people created the European Union, I think, is to prevent a new Mitterrand, a new adventure like they had in 81, 83. Because by creating the European Union, they made reformism, at least leftist reformism in Europe, impossible. Because you have this competition between the state, you have totally free trade, you have free trade within Europe and outside of Europe. And how do you do when you have a relatively high living standard to maintain that? That's a problem. I mean, you see, I'm all for saying that French workers are exploited, okay? But it's a fact that there are hundreds of millions of people in the world and tens of millions of people in Europe who would love to be exploited the way the French workers are. Because if you are exploited and have a low salary in France, you still have a decent housing and a car and food every day on the table, and you know very well that in the third world that's not the case. So if you really said, okay, we want to open the border as much as we can, then of course you will have competition from workers who are more downtrodden than your own workers, but that will not solve the problem of your own workers. So this question of immigration is not so simple.
Well, Jean, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and giving us much to think about. We'll be watching the French elections from here in the United States, April 23rd. Thanks so much. Okay.
Thank you very much, Alain.
Okay. My guest Bye-bye. Is Jean Bricmont. He is a mathematical and statistical physicist at the University of Louvain and author of Humanitarian Imperialism, Using Human Rights to Sell War, co-author of Fashionable Nonsense, Postmodern Intellectuals, Abuse of Science. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.